So today what I wanted to do is focus on something besides the physical lives we live in this life. And another thing we have obviously been praying about is the speakers up here, because CJ's message and mine tie together, kind of opposite ends of the same spectrum. We're going to cover some similar ground, but we're also going to look past what we just went through. We just lived through the last 7 holy days this last year. You know, we look at life when we come back from the feast, we're all excited and we're all determined to be that much more vigilant this year and do a better job this year. And we have this awesome master plan. But you know, it's over. If you look at the annual cycle we've just went through, we wait for like 6 months from now, the spring holy days will start, and we rehearse this every year. And it's an awesome plan, isn't it? You know what that is. You've lived through it. You've experienced it firsthand. But think about from God's perspective just for a moment. The plan that God came up with for this human endeavor, this thing we call physical life, is all-encompassing, 1 Timothy 4. 1 Timothy 2, verse 4. It's all encompassing because God desires everybody to be saved. We know that won't happen, but hopefully the vast majority of the 50 to 60 billion people who have lived on this earth will decide to go God's way after all. And Peter talked about in 2 Peter 3, 9, God's not willing that anybody should perish. That's not his goal. That's Satan's goal, as we heard about in the first message this afternoon. God's master plan is well thought out. How long did it take God to plan this seven holy day cycle that we live through every year? How long did Jesus Christ and God the Father, the one who became Jesus Christ, consider, plan, and work out this plan? Well, 2 Timothy 2:9 talks about 2 Timothy 3:9. It is 1:9. My notes are a little blurry up here. It was according to his purpose, as CJ mentioned, before time began, before there was any circular system in the universe, before the sun was there in its place, and the sun and the moon and the stars were all in their place, before the earth was cycling in that yearly cycle that we count time with. Before time began, God the Father and the one who became Jesus Christ sat down, and they thought, and they pondered, and they came up with the plan of salvation. So it's well thought out. And then it was well implemented. You can read in Genesis 1, verse 31, that God saw everything that he had made. He made man. He made the light, sun shine through on the earth. He made the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the mineral kingdom. And he put man over that kingdom, the human kingdom, and gave him authority over the earth. And what did God say when he got all done? When that plan that they had thought through and planned out in every physical detail, perhaps, for who knows how many billions of years that we would count time, God said, well, you know what? It's pretty good. It's very good. But think about the physical creation and think about what comes after the physical creation is longer there. You know, we've talked with some of you in the past about, you know, you think about the people that live in the millennium, that it's not fair. It's just not fair. They don't have to face Satan. Satan will be tied up for 1,000 years. They're going to have that freedom from Satan's influence, and they won't have to battle those thoughts that come into our minds. They won't have to battle the carnal nature that Satan's so trained in them. They will be carnal in that sense. They will have human nature in a sense, because they will still be human, but they won't have the influence from that outside source that is the father of sin, the one who's the author of confusion, destruction, and misery and death. But you know, those people will be tested. It's pretty clear after the millennium what happens. You know the cycle. You've just gone through this on the seventh day. The seventh holy day, you lived through this, the last great days, we used to call it. What happens then? Satan's loose, and immediately, as fast as you can think, the whole of society there, all these people who maybe have lived 1,000 years, they now have to face Satan in this final test. They will face that powerful demon, and many of them, unfortunately, will succumb. Many of them will give in. God tests for obedient hearts. God tests for right attitudes, not just the right efforts. Some people in the millennium may really feign following God. They may look on the surface as if they are, but God knows the hearts of everybody. The final test they will face, many will fail. It says in Revelation 20, verses 7 through 8 from the NIV, Revelation 20, verses 7 through 8, NIV says, when the 1,000 years are over, what happens? Satan will be released from his prison and will go out and deceive the nations. Where are these nations at? In the four corners of the earth. All over, everywhere on the earth. Gog and Magog, he will gather them together for a battle, a final test, a battle, and their numbers will be like the sands of the seashore. It's going to be huge. It's the final battle. And Satan will go out through all the world and gather all of those that are willing to tune into that signal he's sending out, willing to go the wrong way and fall into his prey to become part of his master plan for the death of all of mankind. Satan's desires will be spread across the world. The battle will focus on where? Jerusalem.
Jerusalem.
That's where the saints will be headquarters in the millennium. That's where the new temple will be built. That's where Christ will be. And that's where we'll be living for 1,000 years. And so Satan is going to focus his human effort to thwart God's plan one last time on the center of where God is working, Jerusalem. It goes on to say in Revelation 20, 8 through 9, and they marched across the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of God's people, the city he loves, that's Jerusalem. But what happens? Fire came down from heaven and devoured them. They gather there to battle. They think they have a chance. They're deceived by Satan. These people that live through the millennium will now fall prey, some of them, to the ultimate destruction of themselves. Fire will come down from heaven and will devour them. And then what happens? This is what we just went through, what we just rehearsed. The great white throne judgment. These people will be resurrected. Everybody who has never had a chance will have their chance. They will have the thought process that is now marked off from Satan. They'll be able to compare their past lives as physical human beings living in Satan's world with God's world and God's way of life for who knows how long. Hopefully, many of those would choose the right way. Hopefully, many of those will say, you know what? This is a better way to live, a better way to think, and a better way to be. And I'm going to do this forever. But some will refuse, some will rebel. It's called the second death in the book of Revelation. The beast and the false prophet will be thrown into this great fiery bin of destruction and death. Satan's will be permanently removed. The good news is we win. But some will give in, some will give up, some will follow his pernicious ways. Revelation 20 verse 10 says that it will be, this is from the version here, that's the English Standard Version, and the devil who has deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur where the beast and the false prophet were. And he will be destroyed. And he will be destroyed and put out of his misery, put away from society as we know it forever and ever and ever. The earth, what happens then? The earth will be permanently cleansed. It says very clearly that in 2 Peter 3, verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away, and the earth and with a great noise, and the elements will be melting. It'll be a fervent, hot place. No human beings left alive. They'll be burnt. The society, Peter's point is, look, if all these things we think are so important are going to eventually be destroyed, after 7,000 years, look at the thought and the effort God went into creating the universe. God put into creating our environment so we can live as human beings. Think about all that. You know, it was just a temporary plan. What happens after that plan? What happens after the holy days have all been fulfilled? What comes next? Because it's going to melt, Peter says. It's going to melt with fervent heat, and the earth will melt, and the works thereof will be gone. God will burn away all the vestiges of sinful carnal nature and the sinful carnal environment that he temporarily made for man. It will become the ideal place for spirit beings to live. So then what? How come there's no master plan revealed in the Bible of what happens after that? I mean, we think 1,000 years is going to be a long time. We focus on the millennium and say, wow, we're going to have 1,000 years. We'll be spirit beings. We'll be training human beings to be like God. It's going to be a fantastic time, a great environment, and it will be. But how long is that from God's perspective? Oh, 1,000 years is as a day. One day later, it's over. That's the way we'll be thinking. What comes next? What is the eternal plan that God has? Does he have one? It's interesting to look back that wise King Solomon in Ecclesiastes 3:11 said, you know what? There's something about this human existence. God has put eternity in our hearts. We all want to live forever. Who wants to die? We don't want to face the being gone until God resurrects us, but we do have to. It's given unto one man wants to die, and after that, the resurrection. But in our hearts, we want to live forever, and God wants us to live forever, as we'll see. Death will be swallowed up in victory. Now, there's a song that I'm going to have someone sing at the end of my message, because it ties right into what we're trying to say here. The last verse goes like this, just to read it to you. This is from God's perspective. I will always be here. I have always been. I will never leave you. You will be my friend. So lift your hearts. Sing out my praise. Life has hope. So choose my ways. Come to me and stay here close for all eternity. That's what God wants. I will not fail. My plan will stand. Trust in me. Just take my hand. How do we get there? We don't see a master plan revealed in the Bible about eternity. We see a glimpse of eternity. That's the title of this message today. We'll get a glimpse of that today, hopefully. But you know what? We can just hang on, take God's hand, and he'll lead us there. But why don't we see a master plan for all eternity? It's going to be a lot longer than 1,000 years. Be a lot longer than 7,000 years. I will not fail. My plan will stand. Trust in me. Just take my hand. Hold it fast. Don't let go for all eternity. What is that plan? What is that hope? What do we look forward to? Jesus Christ in Revelation 21, verse 6, says something. Just focus on this one statement for a moment. And he said to me, it's all done. This is talking about just as human society has come to an end. Everybody's either spirit being in the family of God or not existing at all. He says, it is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the fountain of water to those freely, to him who thirsts. Do we thirst? Do we hunger and thirst for the God's spirit, having more of his mind, more of his thoughts? Are we drifting right back into the world we left before we went to the Feast of Tabernacles and experienced the final day, the eighth day? Is this the end of the beginning when there's no more human beings? Or the beginning of the end? Is it over? What is he saying here? It is done. Is God's plan complete? Is everything done? Did he not think through what happens forever and ever and ever? Are we done with growth and development? Are we indeed going to be spirit beings looking into the beatific vision of Jesus Christ for eternity? I don't think so. Are we going to be fiddling our thumbs and thinking, boy, it's nice to live forever, but I wish I had this ability to use this great mind that I now have because I'm bored stiff. Is that what God means by it is done? In his book, The Revelation of Jesus Christ, John Wolford, on page 316, answers that question. It is done. He says this. The reference is to the work accomplished throughout the whole drama of human history prior to the eternal state. That's what's done. This statement does not mean that there's no future where works of God, but that a major work has been brought to its completion, and that the works now relating to the eternal state are just beginning. Quote that old song, it's only just begun. We're only just beginning. This is real life. We think this physical life is so important and so part of everything that's real. But you know what? The Bible says what we see is not real, but what we don't see is real. In Revelation 21, verse 1, it says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven and the first earth have passed away. So God's going to start over again. He'll probably take the remnants of that burnt-out hulk of the universe and begin to fashion it again. Maybe we'll have a part in that as part of the created beings now on the same level with God the Father and Jesus Christ. What comes next in God's master plan for all eternity? Again, there's not a lot revealed. The physical realm is just patterned after the spiritual. So we can see in Romans 1, verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, God's invisible attributes, are clearly seen, people that aren't called can clearly see, you know, there's some organization in this plant kingdom and this animal kingdom and the mineral kingdom. There's something about the human mind that's different that separates it from animals. May not know what it is, but it clearly reveals there's a mind, there's a power, there's a force, there's a creator behind it all. It's clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. So the things that we see that are made, we can understand the spiritual realm that God fashioned those physical things after, even his eternal Godhead. We're no God. You can look at God by looking at people, because we look like God. We are created in his image. Look at the good hearts and the good minds and the right attitudes when you see them. That's a sampling of God. That's a glimpse of what God is, the Godhead, and that they are without excuse. People that say, oh, there is no God, just are without excuse. Creation was made for temporary existence, a short period of time. We'll spend far more time in eternity. But why do we only get a glimpse of that future? Why are there no holy days after the seventh one? The future is probably just more awesome and all-encompassing than we little human beings or little brains can even grasp. God's revealed a lot, but he hasn't revealed it all. But you know what? God has eternity on his mind. You ever think about that? You look at the New King James Version. God has eternity on his mind. Eternal life is mentioned 32 times, forever 382 times, everlasting 93 times. Christ didn't suffer and die so that we could do nothing forever, just twiddle our thumbs as we waste away time. In 1 Corinthians 2:9 from the NLT version, it says, you know, we just can't comprehend it. Here's the proof. No eye has seen, the ear has not heard, nor the mind has imagined. Can you even imagine what it's going to like to be an eternal being, to have God's mind, God's character, to be perfect in every thought, thing, and action? We can't imagine it, what God has prepared for those who love him. What has God got prepared for this eternal state? I've used some of this information in the past. I'm just going to go through it fairly quickly here. There's going to be a new heaven and a new Jerusalem. It's going to come down from out of heaven. Says that in Revelation 21, verse 2. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. This is the bride. This is where the Lamb's going to be. The Lamb's wife is going to be there. Verse 9 of Revelation 21. And you think about those heroes of faith. You can read in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. What was it that kept them going? They all died in faith, not having received the promises. Why? Because they looked for a better city. A new city. New Jerusalem will be that city eventually. They desired a better heavenly country. And you know what? It says there in Hebrews that God prepared it for them. It's going to look something like that. Again, there's been an estimated 50 to 60 billion people who have lived. The length and breadth and height of this structure is 1,500 miles. Pretty good size, as we've talked about here before. That's like going from L.A. to Minneapolis. It's a pretty long way. Or Vancouver, where I speak often, all the way down to Mexico, into the Mexican border, or past the Mexican border. That's a big edifice, pretty big size. And we think, as human beings, you know, we can just have the tallest building in the whole world. It's going to be a half mile high. Wow, look at me. Aren't I great? Man's inferiority compared to God is just not comparable. And even looking at the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, 5.5 miles high, how about 1,500 miles? Is there enough room for all those billions who will eventually choose to go God's way? I think so. And if we look at God's vision of this new heaven and this new earth, it's nothing less than paradise, whatever that means. How can you get your minds around what's going to be like? I want to try to give you a glimpse of that today. Think about it from God's perspective, because you know what? We're going to be like him. We'll see him as he is. Revelation 21, verses 4 through 6. There shall be no more death. Oh. Don't have to worry about dying of cancer. No more sorrow, nor crying. Now, the Fosters, the one that got me started 36 years ago in Spokane, Washington, on the visiting team and then speaking and song leading and working in church. When you see your loved ones get sick and die, it's not easy. But that's all going to be gone. That's going to be a past thing. There shall be no more pain, no more. The former things have passed away. That he who sat on the throne said, behold, what's the solution? I make all things new. The new heaven and the new earth. And guess where God's going to be? Right there. He will dwell with them and will be his people. Revelation 21, just to skim through and summarize this. God the Father and Jesus Christ will be there. God the Father. No man has ever seen God the Father. You think about the two individual beings that now compose the Godhead. Eventually, it's going to be billions. We're all going to be on the same level. Obviously, they'll also be the ones totally in charge. But the point is, God the Father and Jesus Christ are two individuals. They're not just one big blob of spiritual mess. No, they're individuals. They got together, they planned, they thought, they worked on the creation, the physical creation, just for the temporary existence of human life, so they could bring many sons to glory. They planned it all out, but what happened? God the Father didn't come down and create the earth, didn't come down and create the universe. He said, okay, son, before he was his son, the Logos, the second in the Godhead, the spokesman, is what he's called also, you go do that. And he's the one who breathed over the face of the water and it parted and the dry lands appeared and the animals came up and the plants and human beings were created. And there out of Adam's rib came Eve. Jesus Christ did that. That was a separate entity from God the Father. We'll be separate entities from God the Father and Jesus Christ. We'll be at one just like they are. Spirit beings will be there, the ones written in the book of life, the city of pure gold. So what is this edifice we're talking about? This new Jerusalem. Well, it talks about it being made of pure gold, clear like glass, translucent. You can see right through it. It could very well be just a spiritual edifice, a place that we call home because we're spirit beings. We're on a different plane. And if you think about a 1,500-mile edifice being set down in Jerusalem, it would throw the earth off its axis, likely. So this probably is going to be a spiritual house, abode for all of God's people. City of pure gold, massive precious stones, the gates, like the one you see here, would be made of a solid pearl. And that'll be our home. There'll be no more sea, which means no more human beings around. It'll be a changed environment. It'll be a new heaven, new earth, a new Jerusalem. But why are there not any holy days? Why only seven annual holy days and then the plan of God is ended, what we know in the Bible? Because everybody that was human, that had a chance for human salvation to be saved and become a spirit being, will have already made their choice. They will already be resurrected. So that plan of human salvation is done. That's why we have that outline. And that's what we need to focus on, because we are human. But try to get an overview of where we're headed, brethren. It's a pretty awesome future. Everybody that will have been saved would already been saved. We look back on human suffering. We'll look back on this life as just a temporary passing blip. 70, 80, 90 years if we're lucky. Some of those traumatic and trying. But look what Paul said from his perspective in 2 Corinthians 4, 17 through 18. Of our light affliction that was but for a moment, just like that. How much is 60, 70, 80 years compared to 1,000 years, compared to 7,000 years, compared to eternity? It's but a light affliction just for a moment, working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Eternal weight, Paul's saying. Look, what really comes next is the real life. This is just the temporary training ground for what lies ahead. For things which are seen are temporary. Oh, Paul said, look, you think we're so important as individuals? You think what we see around us is so permanent? The solid piece of wood here is indeed solid and rock sure, but it's going to be burnt up. They're temporary, but the things which are not seen, the eternal state we're going to inherit, we're going to be part of, is eternal, lasts forever. In Revelation 21, verse 7, God promises that we will inherit all things. What does that mean? What does it mean we'll inherit all things? He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God and be my son. Well, it means what's going to be there is the new heaven and new earth, right? So we'll have all that as our inheritance. It'll be ours just as much as it'll be God's. The universe and the spiritual realm, the angels, all the good ones will be there. Satan and the demons evidently will be busily living, rioting and not pain and suffering from the big heat that they went through, but they'll be living in pain and anguish because their plots, their plan for your death has failed. God wins. We don't need to know all the details. God will lead us every step of the way. But we do get a glimpse right here in Revelation 21 and 22. And again, that song says, I will not fail. My plan will stand. Trust in me. Just take my hand. Hold it fast and don't let go for all eternity. God has revealed all we need to know now. And the biggest thing we need to know is this is it, brethren. This is the training ground. This is our one chance to make it, to avoid the lake of fire and be there in this eternal state. Is your life worth it? Is your suffering worth it? 1 John 3, verse 2 says, we're going to have a new body, a new mind, a new character. We can take how God describes himself and say, you know what? We're going to be like God. We'll see him like he is. That will be how we will be. That's how we can get a glimpse of what it's going to be like to be an eternal being. It's only just a glimpse, and it's pretty hard to understand from our limited perspective. But it does say in 1 John 3, 2, now, beloved, we are the children of God, and it was not yet been revealed. Oh, it's not been revealed what we shall be. We can't get there from here. The Bible doesn't reveal it, but we can get a glimpse. But we know that when he is revealed, when Jesus Christ is revealed, we shall be like him. Oh, imagine seeing God. Think about Revelation chapter 1. Describes Christ, his flames like fire, his feet like hot bronze and brass melting in the furnace. Think about you being that way, shining like the sun in full brightness. We'll be like him because we'll see him like he is. And we shall see him as he is. We're not just going to be in God's family, and then we're kind of lesser members down here below, and you know, we're kind of still human, but not quite up to God's standard. No, we're going to be like God. We'll think like God, we'll act like God, we'll have his character traits, we'll be like God. They will always be in charge, but we will be equals in that sense. It may sound blasphemous to some people and other religions who hate to even think about this, but the family of God is God's family. You know, think about Jesus Christ. He was made a little lower than the angels to suffer death. That's where human beings are. We have the elements, family or kingdom. We have the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and man was put over that. And we think we're pretty good. We can send a rocket all the way to Mars and land on it. Wow, look at me. But do we have the universe under our feet? I don't think so. We barely can survive very long on those. In fact, maybe not survive when we try to go to Mars as a human being. Maybe we will. But we'll be like him. So what are the traits God has that we'll inherit, that will be ours? We're not just going to be a member of God's family. We're going to be like God, the plane of existence like God has. So what is God like? We'll be more glorious than the angels, it says in 1 Corinthians, and God's attributes will become our attributes. Okay, put your name up here on this slide. That's you in the eternal state. This is describing you. You'll be a distinct human being. You'll be a distinct being, just like God the Father and Jesus Christ are distinct. We'll have form and shape. We'll look like a human being because we're fashioned after God. So we'll have a divine nature. What in the world can that possibly be like? We can only get a grasp. When we do something right, we think right, we act, that's a grasp of what it's like to be divine. We have the perfect harmony and unity among all the billions of the family of God. God is two now. You can call Jesus Christ God. You can call God God. You can call them both God. There's only two members now. They went through a lot of trouble to create this 7,000-year plan so that we could have billions in the God family. And this is what your will be. You look at God's name, his title, his description, and we'll see one that represents what we're going to be like. How about supreme intelligence? Some people think they're pretty smart, not compared to God. Their wisdom is foolishness to God. How about power, glory, and wisdom? We'll embody all righteousness, all perfection, and all truth. We'll be loving, faithful, caring, generous, patient, kind, just, and compassionate. It's not a Boy Scout motto. That's who you are. That's who you are becoming. We will be fully transformed, completely changed. We'll be on the God plane. Because Jesus Christ, when he was resurrected, was brought from the human plane back up to the God plane. Now, over the physical plane is the spiritual plane, which includes the angels. And above that and above everything is God the Father and Jesus Christ. We'll be on that level of existence. We'll be fully transformed. There's no way God is going to gamble another Satan development, a Satan rebellion, by giving his omnipotent power more than the angels have and immortality to those who refuse to yield to him. That's what we prove in this life. We will do. No vestige of selfish human nature will be left in you or me or anybody else that's there. It'll be perfect, loving, kind, outgoing character. that we'll live perfectly. We'll be eternally existing as complete members of the God family, not second-rate citizens. And the magnitude and the meaning of that, simply, it's impossible to understand. That's why God doesn't give us a lot of details. But we can infer, we can see what God's like, and we're going to be like him. In Psalm 16, verse 11, King David wrote wisely, because he also had a foretaste of what it's like to be eternal with God's Spirit working with him. You will show me the path of life, God. In your presence is fullness of joy. When we're in that eternal state, it'll be complete joy. It doesn't get better than this. Fullness of joy. And at your right hand are pleasures evermore. Are we going to be doing something that's pleasurable to use that active creative brain that we've been given? Absolutely. Life will never be dull, will never be uninteresting. It'll always be new opportunities, new joy. We'll inherit all things. Think about that. We'll inherit all things. All that God has is now ours, and all that he is now ours. Is that worth struggling through this physical life for, but for a moment so we can have eternity? Never underestimate the value of your life. Every one of us who are called by God and respond now in the right way will be there. Your life is worth a bunch, no matter what your physical condition now. It's invested in by God. And he wants you there as a member of his eternal family. We're going to become a member of God's family. Pretty awesome privilege. And in Revelation 21, verse 7, it does say, we'll inherit all things. I will be his God, and he will be my son. Everything that exists, what's going to exist at that time? Well, new heaven, new earth. We just saw that. So we'll have the universe at our disposal. Oh, we'll be focused maybe most of our being inside this New Jerusalem, but that doesn't mean we can't travel to the outer edges of the universe, wherever that is. We can't see that far with telescopes. And the instant thought that we have, and boom, we're there. We'll have the universe. We'll have the spiritual realm. We'll all be working together in harmony and peace, happiness. Isaiah 9 gives a prophecy of Jesus Christ. And it clearly shows there, Isaiah 9, verse 7, that the increase, the building up, and the expansion of that government and peace that it will produce will never end. It has no end. We're going to be going on. We're going to be using that new found power and mind and ability like we can even imagine now. In Hebrews 2, verse 8, it says there, as it does in Corinthians as well, that you put all things under man's feet. It's all under, well, you know what? And then it goes on to say, but it's not there yet. Now, we do not yet see all things put under him. Oh, we're still physical, but eventually we're going to be spiritual. And everything that is, and everything we don't even begin to understand now will be ours. The writer of Hebrews was quoting Psalm 8, verse 3. And it goes on to talk about your heavens, your works, the works of your fingers, the moon, the stars. So it's logical to conclude that possibly we could do part or be part in this refashioning, remolding, and rebuilding of the new universe, the new heavens. So what is that going to be like? Well, we only get a glimpse of it today. Just a glimpse. This is about as far as we can see with our best telescopes now, about 92 billion light years in diameter. We still can't see the edge of the universe. It still goes on and expanding outward all the time. There's 6 trillion miles per light year. So you that are mathematicians can put your calculators on and figure out 92 billion light years times 6 trillion. How far is that? Well, it's beyond my thoughts, beyond what I can figure out. It's been guesstimated, which is all they can do. There's about 10 trillion galaxies. And so how many stars? If you were to guess, how many stars do you say are out there? Well, that's what they've done. They've taken the Milky Way galaxy, where they can see most of the stars, we think. And they say, okay, I count the number there, and I put that down on this calculator, and I can say, look in the galaxy, how far I can see, 92 billion light years. Then I figure out about how many galaxies I see out there, and then I can put that together and extrapolate as about 100 octillion stars. That's one with 29 zeros after it, you can see on the screen. Christ wasn't kidding when he said, told his disciples, look, John 14, verses 2 through 3. He wasn't kidding. He said, you know, my Father's house, there are many mansions. There's lots of work to do ahead of us. If it were not so, I would have told you. But I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself. So he's gone. It's been almost 2,000 years. What's he been doing all this time? Are you getting a little impatient? God's not. He's got a master plan. He's willing to let other people come into his truth, other people to be converted. We don't have no idea when God's plan physically is going to be done. And we don't have no idea when God's plan spiritually is going to be done forever, but it's going to be there. Eventually, Christ will return. What's he been doing? He went to prepare a place for us. He's preparing a place for us by preparing us for that place. Part of Jesus Christ's job as high priest is to answer our prayers, to listen to us, to understand where we're off on our thoughts and where we're right on our thoughts, to help mold us and shape us into the eternal beings that want to live forever and be like him and his Father forever and ever and ever. I will come again, he does promise that, and receive you to myself. And where I am, there will you be also. Right there in that new Jerusalem is where Jesus Christ will be. That's where we'll be in this eternal state. And then in Matthew 13, verse 43, think about the universe now. Here's a question for you. Christ hinted through the parable that we'll be rewarded by what we do with what we've been given in this life, an opportunity, an ability. We put this together. We accomplish something for God. That's going to be our reward. We'll be given cities. How many cities depends on your abilities and what you do with it. But it's what you do with what you've been given, not the abilities or how smart you are that counts. So what happens when there are no more cities? What's your reward then? What are you going to be doing? Where are you going to be spending eternity? Well, perhaps God's going to say, okay, this section of the galaxy is to you and those closest to you. You go manage that. You work with that. You build up new earth. So you do whatever God decides we're going to do with this new heaven and new earth. And then guess what? We're going to look like he does. Then the righteous will shine forth as the sun and his kingdom, the kingdom of their father. You're going to be a sun, not a born physical sun, but a sun that glows, that's brilliant, brighter than any sun imaginable in the skies. And Daniel 12, verse 3, he also saw how bright the conclusion will be to our lives. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness. Do you work to turn many to righteousness? How about turning yourself to righteousness? That's hard enough, isn't it? We do that, then God says we're going to be like the stars forever and ever and ever. How many times can you say that? It's going to go on and on and on. Is your life worthwhile? What is our responsibility to make sure we're going to be in this eternal state? To be faithful watchmen. First of all, to watch our own spiritual condition, because without that, nothing else happens. We will be part of that lake of fire. Not a pretty thought. We won't be in that eternal state. We won't live forever. We won't think like God. We won't act like God. We won't have all those abilities that God has. It won't never happen unless we watch our own spiritual condition. Number two, we need to watch the signs of the times. Christ said he would return, and he's going to make it clear to his saints when that's going to be. It's not going to come as a surprise to us. It will to society. But we need to be watching societal trends, news. We need to be trained now to be governable, to be humble, to be teachable. That's the process by what we go through. God's revealed that very clearly to us. His master plan for the salvation of humankind is real clear because that's who we are. What happens after that, we can speculate a little bit and we can look and we can get a glimpse of eternity. But you know, he said, don't be like it was in Noah's day. You can look at it from Christ's point of view. He's looking back and he said, okay, there's going to come a major end time tribulation. It's going to be millions of people killed. Many won't survive, but those who do, the remnant will be the humble, the teachable, they'll live through the millennium. You'll work as spirit beings. You'll have 1,000 years head start on the rest of those who aren't spirit beings yet. They haven't been brought up in the great white throne judgment. So you will have a head start to learn how to be God, how to be humble and merciful in spite of the power and strength and brilliance of your mind and your character. But God was looking down and Christ said, look, there's going to be most of the people are going to be like it was in Noah's day. They're going to be eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. Things just going to go home, humming along. Probably took about 100 years for Noah to build that big ark. Imagine that structure, which was bigger than any boat or ship we have any record of till the mid-1800s. Here he is, sitting it on land. How is he going to get that to the water, no matter how close the water is? As these big structures went up and the beams went around, the pitch went between the boards. People watched him for 100 years, and they probably laughed at him and jeered and thought, who does this guy think he is? You can't even float that thing. What are you going to do with that monstrosity when it's done? Well, they soon found out when the floods opened up and the earth began to bubble up water and the rains came down and the ark began to lift. and those people clawed to the side as the door was closed, and the few human beings and samples of animals that survived drifted away and they drowned. Don't be that way. We have to make sure that we come to God and we are wise. Because Hosea 14, verse 9 says, the wise will understand. They'll understand God's ways. They'll understand what lies ahead. But transgressors, those who habitually fall back into sin and don't fight it, fight Satan's attitude and mind, Satan's kingdom, his plan for you, has got to be fought tooth and nail. But we can rest assured we just resist Satan and he has to flee. But we have to resist. We know that there's a bright future out there, brethren, for all of us. A very bright future. Christ promised, don't fear, little flock, in Luke 12, verse 32. For it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Not just the millennium, but to give you everything. Inherit everything. Everything that God is and everything that he has will be ours. And we just stay the course and not give up.